Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 2, Episode 4, entitled Invasive Procedures. This episode aired October 17th, 1993.
Episode 4 already. The last three just flew by.
Well, because they were all one big episode.
Yes.
It tricked us.
Yes, they did.
So before we get going on this episode, is there anything from the previous podcast that you would like to discuss?
No, it was perfect. It's very long. For some reason, we spent a lot of time overanalyzing it, or just babbling to each other.
We have a lot of important things to say. We're going to try something a little different in this episode of the podcast. We're going to share the duties of describing the scenes and see how it goes.
So it might be really good or terrible.
Well, we'll see. I'm the one who takes all the notes, so I'm generally the one who does all of it, but it is exhausting, and so we're going to try splitting the duty a bit, and we'll see what happens. It's a whole new era.
Yes.
We open with Sisko giving a station log on Stardate 47182.1. He says the station has been temporarily evacuated, which is hilarious, because how many times have we called for an evacuation? How did they possibly accomplish this feat? We've never been able to do it before.
That's a very good point. Maybe they finally installed like some lights and a button where they can press it and all of a sudden it just starts flashing, please evacuate.
Something. Anyway, he says the station was evacuated due to a violent plasma disruption. Until the disturbance ends, we'll be forced to maintain the station with a skeleton crew. And as they show the outside of the station, we see sort of a lightning storm in a gigantic blue cloud near the station. We drop into ops and Sisko asks how we're holding up. Kira says, so far so good. I'll say one thing for the Cardassians, they built this place to last. Kira is standing at the big center console table, and I worry about the ergonomic setup because they always are just like leaning over it. I mean, she's short, so she doesn't have a long ways to lean over, but that's not good for your neck.
No.
That's the kind of things I think about.
Yeah, I can understand that one. It's like cocktail arcade games. Even back in the day, I couldn't play those things because after about 5 minutes, my neck would no longer function.
That is virtually the same exact thing.
Yep.
Dax says she's got the Orinoco prepped and ready at Pad C if they need to escape. Meanwhile, Miles and Odo have been sealing off the airlocks in the upper and lower pylons, and they're moving on to the docking ring. Sisko calls Miles for a status report, and Miles says they're almost done. They've sealed all the airlocks on levels 21 through 23. They still have to check the outer bulkheads to make sure that there hasn't been any crystallization from the plasma discharges. It shouldn't take too long. Miles has a terrible haircut. This is not a good look for him. Also, Odo's hair looks funny. It looks more hair-like, so I don't know, maybe we hired a new hairstylist this season.
Oh, he's been practicing.
Oh, maybe. They're walking along a corridor, and you hear faint banging in the background. Odo wonders what that noise is, and he opens an airlock to find Quark sitting on the floor, his legs crossed and his hands in a sort of praying formation. This is already suspicious. What is he up to?
Yeah, I mean, he missed the opportunity of just pressing the vent button on the airlock there.
Right. Odo asks what he's doing there, since Sisko ordered him to stay in the bar. Quark says he's not a prisoner, he volunteered to stay and help protect the station. Odo says the only reason you volunteered is because there wasn't enough room on the evacuation shuttle for all of your latinum. Which seems accurate, as he was dragging his latinum all over the station in the previous episode of The Siege.
Yes. It's culturally very important to him.
Yeah. It's like an emotional support toy.
Yes.
Quark stands up saying that he was saying goodbye to his brother, which Odo points out was 3 hours ago. Quark says, it's only been 3 hours and I'm already lost without him. When Odo scoffs that Quark would betray him in an instant, Quark says, Rom is an idiot, but still his brother. And Odo scoffs again. This time it even says, Odo scoffs in the closed captions. Quark asks Miles if he has any brothers that he's ever had to say goodbye to, and apparently he has two, which is news to me. Miles said he had to say goodbye to them when he joined Starfleet, and Quark asks if it brought a tear to his eye, and Miles kind of shrugs, I suppose so. Well, try explaining that to him, meaning Odo. Odo crosses his arms, unmoved by the story. Quark leaves, Odo shuts the airlock door, and they walk off together, but the camera pans back to a little device attached to the wall in the room Quark was just in. And it looks like one of those handheld football games that were so cool in the 80s,
and then
they came back as a retro handheld game a while ago.
That is true.
Yeah. And the music swells into the theme song. Why wouldn't they go back and do a quick survey in that room to see what Quark was up to?
Yeah, when you know what Quark's like, he's up to something. He was either stripping copper from the walls so he could sell it, or he was up to something nefarious.
Totally. There's no way he's not up to something.
Yeah. So we come back from the slow-moving comet, as Kim hasn't pointed out for a while, and we see there is a blue cloud around the outside of the station. Dax says the storm's intensity is up 37%, and Kira wonders if there's any way to know how long it will last. But Dax says, your guess is as good as mine. Plasma storms are extremely rare. This was a good take because then they don't actually have to ever explain why there was another plasma storm in the rest of the series.
Right.
But look on the bright side. This gives us a good opportunity to study one. Oh, lucky us, says Kira, just as Dr. Bashir comes up the elevator. Does that mean, oh, lucky us that there's a plasma storm, or oh, lucky us that Bashir's coming up the elevator?
Either way.
Sisko asks if the promenade is secure, and Julian says he's struck the sails and battened the hatches, so to speak. Then Dax detects a small vessel headed towards the station at 1/4 impulse. They try to put their hail on screen, but Kira can't get a visual. A staticky voice says, this is the cargo ship, Akina. Our engines have been severely damaged by the storm, and we need emergency assistance. Kira is unable to keep a connection with them, and Sisko asks if they can get a transporter lock, but she can. He says to use the tractor beam to bring them into the closest docking bay. Bashir says he'll head to the infirmary in case there are casualties. Sisko calls Miles and tells him about the ship coming in. Miles says he'll have to release the emergency seal on the airlock before they can board, so he heads out. Now we see the small yellow tractor beam bringing the ship into the station. Miles heads into the airlock and opens the door. A woman comes stumbling out, coughing. There's a blue mist in there, so it sounds like it must have leaked into the ship, this plasma storm, or whatever. But it's a trap. A pair of Klingons storm in. Miles says, we just saved your life out there. And the Klingon says, you see, the ever-helpful Federation. So predictable.
How come Odo can't do anything about this? He just stands there.
That does not seem very good.
No.
Miles says, maybe you haven't heard, the Klingon Empire and the Federation are allies. The dude spits and says, the Empire is governed by doddering fools and frightened old women, then takes their comm badges.
That's not nice.
I assume these Klingons are members of House Jurass. They don't seem to be very much in favor of the current Klingon government.
And also they've done the usual DS9 trick of taking the comm badges.
Oh.
It happens constantly. But also, they take Odo's comm badge. Now, how can Odo have a real comm badge, by the way? Because when he shapeshifts, what would happen to that thing? Wouldn't it always just drop to the floor and they never show that?
Well, that's true. Or maybe he just takes it and absorbs it inside himself.
Yeah.
When he shapeshifts back, he puts it out again.
Like when he turns into a painting, I envision that the thing in the painting still has the badge attached to it.
Yes, like on the back of the painting, there'll be a comm badge.
But what happens to it when he turns into a rat, which is his favorite thing to do?
Well, maybe he keeps the comm badge inside the rat body.
Hmm. I guess he could, because he's not a real rat.
Yeah.
What happens when he dumps himself into the bucket? Is it just dumped in the bucket?
I assume he takes the comm badge off and like puts it on his desk or has a special comm badge holder in the bucket.
It just seems suspicious.
You did get a really good look at Klingon teeth in this scene, though.
Oh, yes. It was nasty.
The woman holding Odo at gunpoint says, this is the one. He must be the shapeshifter. The second Klingon shouts at a dude behind him saying, what are you waiting for? A skinny guy comes out with a red box with handles and sits it on the floor. As he's pushing buttons on the box, Miles says, you're a Trill. And the dude looks up at him and we see it's Lionel Luther, also known as the actor John Glover. I actually remember him as Daniel Clamp from Gremlins 2. He will always be Clamp to me.
Oh. He'll always be Lionel Luther to me. And I'm sorry to say that you are working from my notes, and he's pretty much called Lionel Luther for the rest of the episode. I'm just going to warn you. You can do what you want with that.
I'll throw in a Clamp every now and then. He was a really good Lionel Luther, I will say that.
Yeah.
The guy doesn't say anything. He just backs away. The first Klingon shouts at Odo to get into the box, and he says he'll kill Miles if he doesn't. He gets into the box, of course.
Can't he just fake it? Like, he did that thing before where he sort of went through a closed door. Like, couldn't he somehow pretend that he went into the box and just make himself a part of the box? I don't know. This whole thing just seemed like an awfully easy way to get rid of Odo.
I suppose you needed to do something to get rid of Odo.
Yes, absolutely.
They then pick up the box and head into the station. In the infirmary, they take Bashir's comm badge and give him the box containing Odo. Miles tells him that Odo is in the box, and they make Bashir take it and put it into one of the stasis chambers.
Down in ops, Dax is saying she's still not getting a response from O'Brien or Odo. Come on, people, realize there's a problem. As they're about to run a security scan, one of the Klingons and the woman come into ops with O'Brien and Bashir at gunpoint. Lionel Luther comes in behind and says, please take your hands away from the controls. The Klingon fires a warning shot at the ceiling, which I think never makes any sense when they're firing warning shots with the phasers. He tells everyone to get to the center of the room. Sisko tells them to do what he says. The woman quietly says to Lionel Luther, don't worry, Varad. It's going to be all right. Then she grabs all of their comm badges, which at this point, who are they going to call anyway?
Yeah.
Kira never falters from her perfect posture. All of them are now in the center of the room, and I think in addition to having some evacuation drills, we need to have some security drills to prepare for this kind of situation.
Yes, maybe they should have locked down ops during this storm so you couldn't just walk in.
Yeah, they could have done something better. The Klingon says, "Your turn, little man," to Lionel Luther, which is pretty funny considering the Klingon is shorter than him.
Yes.
Anyway, the woman and Lionel Luther start mucking around with the computer. Lionel tells her not to forget to disable the backup as well as the primary system. Miles whispers that this is all his fault. They caught him by surprise. They must have neutralized the security systems. Shocking. How did they manage that? Sisko wonders. Miles says he's not sure, but he has a pretty good idea. Let me guess, it's that football game that Quark attached to the wall. This place and the devices that override everything. I just don't understand why we don't do something about this.
Yeah, their security protocols are pretty lax if they can be overridden constantly.
Terrible. It's one thing to have lax protocols on a starship where you're controlling sort of who's around you, but to have lax protocols on this station where you can't control who's coming and going, there's no excuse for that.
And during a lockdown? I mean, come on.
Miles says they ran into Quark in an airlock a little while ago. Well, Kira says, when this is over, Quark and I are going to have a little talk.
I would not want to be the one having that talk with Kira.
No.
I would guess there's a pretty good chance that body parts would be removed during it.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Lionel Luther is wearing one of the comm badges and he's mucking around at Dax's station. Dax finally notices now that he's a Trill, and Sisko asks if she knows him, and she doesn't answer, but she does seem to recognize him. The camera like hangs on her face for a really long time and her expression keeps adjusting a little bit, but you have no idea what she's thinking. It's very weird.
It does seem to be odd that Dax gives this appearance of almost knowing who he is, having some recognition of the guy. She doesn't actually know who he is, or she doesn't admit to it. Do you think she did?
No, I don't think she knew him. I think you're supposed to be thinking that she's seen a person who is a Trill, and she's trying to figure out what he's doing there, specifically because she's seen that he's a Trill.
Oh, okay. Okay, because this is very un-Trill-like behavior.
Right.
Okay, so in Quark's bar, Quark is playing with a box of something. Looks like small cylinders of a gold liquid, and he takes one and puts it in his pocket. The other Klingon comes in, and Quark says, "Ah, Yeto, it's such a pleasure doing business with Klingons. You're so punctual. I see your ship was rescued according to plan. I've got your merchandise right here, but I don't see any Latinum." The Klingon says, "You Ferengi think you're all so clever, but you're stupid." "There's no need for name-calling," says Quark. "If you don't want these liquid data chains, I'm sure I can line up a dozen other buyers." "Go right ahead," says the Klingon, as Quark locks up the box. "You expect me to believe that you've come all this way, braved the storm, just to tell me the deal was off?" The Klingon pulls out his phaser and points it at Quark. "Stupid Ferengi." Quark nervously laughs.
Liquid data chains. What the heck is that?
I think this is your trick you talked about earlier, where they like putting words together until they get something cool.
Yeah. What do you think was stored on the liquid data chains? I guess that doesn't matter. This is like the briefcase that we never find out what's in it.
I assume they were just some kind of clandestine storage device, maybe? Some way of smuggling things? Or a controlled technology that Quark was selling to them under the counter?
Probably stole it from someone.
Equally as likely, yes. Once again, we see Quark, not quite the businessman he thinks he is. He's actually kind of easy to trick at the end of the day.
He is, but I also think he does so many deals, I think he only expects a small percentage of them to actually work out.
Oh.
I think he's worked that into his plan.
Oh, okay, that's a good point. Okay. So back in Ops, Sisko approaches the Klingon saying, "He is the commander of the station, and what is your business here?" The Klingon says, "You'll have to ask my employer." Oh, these are Klingons for hire. Is there any honor in that?
Good question.
The Klingon nods towards Lionel Luther. Lionel says, "He's sorry about all of this. If everyone would just cooperate, I promise it will soon be over." What will soon be over? But before we get an answer, Yeto and Quark come up the elevator, with Quark shouting that this is an outrage. Kira grabs Quark by the lapels and asks, "Who are these people?" The woman with the phaser shouts, "That's enough." Sisko says, "I agree. Now tell me what you want here." Lionel Luther says, "Dax. I want Dax." Oh God, is this a Bashir thing?
Oh my God, they've come to the station to creep on Dax. Oh man.
It could be. He says, "She's not going anywhere with you." "No, no, I don't want the girl. I only want what's rightfully mine, what should have been mine years ago. I want Dax, the symbiont." Dax says, "He's come to steal my symbiont." The music swells and we go into the ad break.
That seems really bad.
Yeah, but they've already covered that if you're separated from your symbiont after they bond, the host dies.
Right. We come back from the ad break and Julian says, "You can't remove Jadzia's symbiont. If you do, she'll die." Sisko crosses his arms and says, "He knows that, Doctor. I'm sorry about all this," Lionel Luther says. And he has a bit of a stutter, which I forgot to mention earlier. I think he's trying to play him as shy and nervous, but he's Lionel freaking Luther, so I'm not sure that works. We also failed to mention that he's Bryce Cummings, L.A. Slimeball.
He seems like a very meek character, yes.
He says he's sorry about all this. "Please believe me, I wish I didn't have to do this." Sisko says, "Then don't." Lionel says he doesn't have a choice. "I spent my whole life trying to qualify for the joining. I studied constantly, every waking hour. I sacrificed everything. And then I went before the Symbiosis Evaluation Board and they reduced my entire life to one word, unsuitable." "That's nothing to be ashamed of," Dax says. "Neither of my parents or my sister underwent symbiosis. And they live happy and productive lives. Only 1 trillion 10 is chosen." "That's easy for you to say," Lionel says. "They chose you." Dax says she was one of the lucky ones. Then the woman says, "Now it's Varad's time to be lucky."
I would think on a societal level, this would cause like real class distinctions between people who were joined and people who weren't. Or maybe I'm just looking at it in human terms.
Yeah, because this implies that it could cause that. But I mean, we don't have a lot to work with here.
I would worry about fraud, nepotism, you know, building dynasties of people who get joined with the symbiont. I guess the Trills are more enlightened people.
I picture it as being like Gattaca.
Oh, wow, that's even darker than me.
I love that movie.
But that is a problem. You would potentially end up with this super elite.
Well, I think it depends, because they make a point of saying that there's a biological component to it, right?
Oh.
And if they can do that, then they're saying that they're making decisions based on science, not making decisions based on your status.
Yeah.
And if that's true, then that would mean that there would be less of a class distinction than maybe if somebody were getting chosen because they paid the right people or they greased the right palms.
Yeah.
Kira asks, "Why Dax? There are thousands of symbionts on Trill. Why her?" Lionel Luther says, "He did the research and worked it all out. The Dax symbiont is the best match for him. We have mutual interests, science, diplomacy." Sisko says, "There's another reason, isn't there? After you've stolen the symbiont, you can escape to the Gamma Quadrant through the wormhole." Dax says she understands his frustration, but there could be dozens of reasons why the board didn't select him. An improper joining can cause permanent psychological damage to both the symbiont and the host. They were only looking after your best interests. Lionel Luther says, "Your best interest, maybe. All they've done is condemn me to a life of mediocrity. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life dreaming of what I could have been, what I should have been. I deserve more, and I'm going to get it."
Okay, this guy is crazy and entitled.
Right? The Klingons grab Dax and the Doctor. Bashir shouts he'll have no part of this, and Lionel Luther says, "I understand," and he points his phaser at Miles and shoots. As everyone dives to check on Miles, Quark hides behind the stairs. Lionel Luther tells Bashir to keep away from Miles. Miles appears to be okay, but he's holding his arm. "There, you see, I've taken the first step. Even if I don't get what I want, my life is over. So either you help me, or you and your friends will die. It's your choice." I'm not sure why he said, "See, my life is over," when he just shot Miles in the arm. I mean, if he had killed him, yeah, your life would be over. Dax says he'll help, meaning Bashir will help. "I don't want anyone else hurt because of me. But you have to give me your word that no one else on the station will be harmed." "I promise," Luther says. She asks Julian to do what he says, and Bashir looks at Sisko, who nods at him.
Yes, because a psychopath who is prepared to take a Trill out of a living host, thus killing them, shoots Miles, you can totally take his word that everything will be fine.
Right. Oh, he's very trustworthy.
Yeah. Oh, and when he has 2 bloodthirsty Klingons without honor working on his payroll.
Right. Bashir is very upset. He says, "Let me treat the phaser wound first. It won't take long." And Lionel Luther says it's okay. Bashir takes the emergency medical kit out and then uses a little device with a purple light on him, saying there should be no permanent damage. And Miles nods at him.
Just a word of advice here. Why don't they keep a phaser in the medical kit?
Ugh, yes, such a good idea. Or something to knock everybody out. How about that?
Oh, yeah.
Remember how Odo had in Dramatis Personae that program that he was like, "Computer, run Odo 1, his first ever program,
yes."
And it shot that gas into the room or whatever? They should always have that. Some kind of thing, some protocol, right? Something that they can just say and it knocks everybody out temporarily.
Yeah, and keep it running on the computer in the doghouse.
Oh my gosh, that was a different episode, but yes. The Klingon grabs Bashir and Sisko tells him to do as he says. This is no time to be a hero. And they head off to the infirmary. Kira says, "This isn't over, Dax." And then Sisko comes up to Dax to say goodbye. And Dax says, I know, you'll do everything you can. And just in case it isn't enough, I want you to know it's been fun. This character is so peculiar sometimes. I'm not sure if she hasn't quite figured out the voice of Dax.
Yeah.
Or if the writers haven't figured it out. It just comes across as slightly off.
I think that might be deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
Jadzia has that sort of maverick side of Curzon.
Yeah. They all head off to the infirmary. Before he leaves, Lionel Luther says to his girlfriend, it won't be long now, and you'll see, everything will be just as I promised. I know, she says. The woman and the first Klingon remain in ops to guard the others.
Why do I get the feeling this guy's lying?
I don't know if he knows he's lying, but he's definitely lying.
In medical, it appears the patients are ready for surgery, lying on surgical tables with their stomachs exposed. Bashir is applying the Delta Wave inducer to Lionel's head to keep him asleep during the operation. But Lionel doesn't want it. He wants to be awake. That seems like a bad idea during a medical procedure.
Yeah.
He tells Bashir to use a neural electric suppressor and set up a monitor so he can watch the procedure and assist. Great. You're having to do a procedure you don't want to do, against your will, and you have a backseat driver helping.
Lionel Luther should pay more attention to his haircut, because at this point, you can see his very bad bowl haircut that he's got going.
Yeah, clearly he didn't spend a lot of money on haircuts.
There's a lot of questionable hair so far in this episode, although remember Kira had that killer haircut in episode 2 of this season.
Yeah.
They got to get that person back, whoever did that hair.
Bashir does not look thrilled. He puts the thing on Dax's head and says, I'm sorry, Jadzia. She takes his hand and says, I don't blame you, Julian. You did everything you could.
Did he?
She closes her eyes and Julian says, forgive me.
And his hair is also terrible in this scene. Honestly, I don't know what's happened in this episode, but the hair is out of control.
Was there a hairdresser's strike in Hollywood?
So Jadzia says, you did everything you could. Did he? Did anyone? I just feel like we haven't done anything.
Yeah.
We've just kind of gone, oh, okay, he shot Miles in the arm, so clearly we should do everything he tells us.
Right. And he threatened everyone.
As usual, I have a problem with the plans that we make. I mean, we obviously we should have been prepared for something like this. We should have been doing drills, but that's a different story. Still, in this particular situation, one of the members of the crew, their life is in danger. And nobody does anything.
They do seem to be very reactionary to everything.
Deep Space Nine should be renamed to We Have No Plans.
So back to Ops. Quark is playing with something between his fingers, and it looks like a coin. Kira is continuing to run the regenerator tool over Miles, asking Sisko how long Dax can survive without the symbiont. He says once the symbiont is removed, the host usually dies within hours. Mr. Grumpy Klingon says, no talking, and walks over, kicking Miles. That doesn't seem very honorable.
Hey, kicks him right in the phaser wound. That was jerky.
Yeah, this enrages Sisko, who attacks the Klingon. They seem to be about evenly matched. I mean, Sisko's a big guy, Klingons are pretty big. I'd put even money on that fight.
Yeah.
They get into a scuffle, and Kira goes for the woman, but somehow the woman knocks her out. Okay.
No.
No.
No. Don't buy it.
Yeah.
She knocked out a Cardassian, who is like double her size.
Kira can go toe-to-toe with Cardassians. Yeah. I'm thinking this woman is picking up her jaw from the floor 2 days later.
Yeah, that made no sense to me.
Right. However, I will say, perhaps this woman did come from a planet with higher gravity than Bajor, so she might have a weight advantage or a strength advantage.
I'm starting to notice you fall back to that suggestion a lot. That,
yes, yes.
That obviously is headcanon for you, that in many cases where you can't explain something, you go to the gravity change.
Yep. I feel it is a valid point and worth continuing to state.
Yeah, that's good. Headcanon can come in very handy.
Sisko gets the upper hand on the Klingon, but the woman comes up behind him with a phaser. She says she doesn't want to kill him, but she will. Now we cut back to medical, and Bashir has taken the symbiont out. And, well, it's not the best special effect. Let's just say that.
It looks as ridiculous as it did in the very first episode where they showed the Curzon Jadzia transition.
Yeah.
This is even maybe worse because they do an actual close-up of him. He takes the thing out of the pouch, right? And then he clips it with a little scissors. And I was like, oh, come on. It was so silly.
It looked fine on a 19-inch standard def TV. It looked really
maybe.
Good.
The whole thing was bizarre. Julian is wearing gloves. He's not wearing a mask. It doesn't even seem sanitary. He like takes it out of the pouch in Jadzia and puts it into the pouch in the other guy. The whole thing is, it looks silly. But I also at this point was really questioning how this is going to work, because Dax is still a thing. It's a sentient thing. Now you're going to put that into the other guy. Isn't Dax going to have some say? Isn't Dax going to have some impact on Lionel Luthor's decisions?
Right. You would think that would come into play. They talk about how the symbionts share their memories, but I guess the symbionts don't actually take control. They just act as a additional brain, as it were.
Even if the symbiont doesn't have any physical control over the body of the host, which I still question. I'm not sure I'm buying that story.
Okay.
But even all of the personality traits and the history of all of the other hosts, plus the symbiont, are going into Lionel Luthor.
Yes.
Do they not impact his behavior?
Yes. Right. I get what you're saying. So the host could be a really bad person.
Right.
Well,
like this guy.
And the symbiont, could the symbiont reject them or have a problem with that?
Yeah.
Put me back in the nice lady.
Hmm. Yeah. The answer is no.
It seems to be.
It's like along for the ride.
Yeah. Once they're transferred, they're there for the duration.
I love how Varad in the scene wanted to be awake to assist, but really, there's not much to the surgery. It's like, I take the thing out of this pouch and I put it into this pouch.
Right.
It took like 20 seconds.
It's almost like they've evolved for it.
Oh, well, good point. We go back to Ops and Quark whispers to Kira, "This is ridiculous. Don't you realize they're going to kill us?" He tells Kira, "We should do something." And she says, "Do you have any ideas?" And he says, "He's not a military mastermind. He's just a victim of circumstance," which is a very on-brand thing for Quark to say.
Oh.
And she's like, "Victim? Really?
I caused all of this. Yeah, I'm the victim."
She says, "Maybe you'd like to tell me how four armed terrorists got by our security grid. You've gone too far this time." And I wonder, has he? They never do anything to him. He gets away with everything all the time. There's a lot of threats.
But he makes nice drinks. That's totally forgivable.
She says, "You sold us out, and now Dax is going to die because of it." She says, "Whatever happens next, one thing is certain, you are through here." Quark kind of snarls as she walks away from him, but I have my doubts that that's true. I mean, I guess we'll see next episode. I haven't watched the next episode, but I'm pretty sure Quark remains on the station. The woman asks Kira if she's okay. She says she'll live. And then she says, "Don't try that again. I don't want to have to hurt anyone." Kira scoffs, "Tell that to Jadzia." "That's different," she says. And Kira says, "Do you really believe that? You heard Varad. They didn't give him any other choice." Kira says, "That's his reason. What's yours?" She says, "I owe him. I grew up on the streets on Kefka 4, and I never would have made it out of there without him."
Following the tradition that a planet always has to be referred to with a number afterwards.
Sisko asks, "What was he doing on Kefka 4? And she says, "He was the communications clerk at the Federation Consulate." She says, "I used to help him relax," which I put double quotes around. I don't know what that means. "And then when he was recalled to Trill, I went with him, and we've been together ever since."
She was a socializer.
What does that mean?
That was the euphemism from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh. Kira says, "And that's it? He got you out of a bad situation, and now you're willing to kill for him? I owe him my life," she says. "If there's anything I can do for him, I'll do it. Even if that means losing him," Sisko asks. "Losing him? After the surgery, Varad won't just be Varad anymore," Sisko tells her. "He'll be a blending of Varad with all the previous hosts, their memories, their knowledge, their personalities. I know he'll change," she says. "He'll be smarter and more confident, but in all the important ways, he'll be the same." "I'm sorry," Sisko says. "If he told you that, he's lying."
Ooh, that is harsh.
Yeah. Once a Trill is joined, it's like a rebirth.
Sisko's experienced this firsthand with his relationship with Curzon changing into Dax and how he's still now building that new relationship.
Yeah. He says, "He'll be an entirely different person." She says, "If you think I'm going to betray Varad, you're wrong. I love him. I'm going to stand by him no matter what." "I never doubted it," Lionel Luthor says, as he has snuck into Ops. "Varad," she says, as she goes to him and tries to hug him. And he pushes her back really gently and says, "Not just Varad.
Wow.
I'm Varad Dax." Sisko looks very upset.
This is a great piece of acting from John Glover. The way everything about him changes.
His hair.
Even the hair, yes. He turns into, I thought, Lionel Luthor, exuding confidence.
A little bit.
And bringing to a close this whole scene of Sisko saying how he's going to change. He's not going to be the same person. And then in he walks as this different person.
Yeah.
Just really nicely put together.
Where he looks different, but also he reacts differently to her.
Yes. We come back from the ad break, and in medical, Jadzia's vitals are failing. Bashir is trying to patch her up and scanning her while the Klingon stands guard. He tries to get the Klingon to help, but he's not interested. Bashir tells the Klingon to help him, but the Klingon says, why should he? She let herself be slaughtered like a mindless Tagla. If she wanted to live, she should have fought back. That's very Klingon.
Very.
Well, The whole idea if she'd fought back and died,
yeah,
you placing Stovakor would be guaranteed. Bashir says she did what she did to save the rest of us. The Klingon replies, then she is a fool and deserves her fate. Bashir yells at him a bit, and he says he doesn't really give a crap about stupid Klingon philosophies.
Yes.
Well, I think Klingon philosophy would be kind of interesting.
Maybe not in this scenario.
But anyway, he then takes the instrument and starts doing whatever it was that Bashir wanted him to do. Somehow, he manages to stabilize Jadzia, and she wakes up. She starts to cry and says the symbiont is gone. I feel so alone, she says. He tells her, I've stabilized you, and if we could get the symbiont back in time, she could be saved. I'm not going to let you die. She says she's never felt so empty. Just rest, says Julian.
I thought when he said the surgery went perfectly and everything was a complete success that he wasn't reading the room very well. It's like, I don't know why you're so upset. Everything went great.
We go back to Ops and Sisko says, Dax, Tobin, Jadzia, all of the others are part of you now? That's right, Benjamin, Lionel Luthor smiles. It's amazing. So many ideas, so many memories, 8 lifetimes of memories. Sisko says, it must be incredible. It's better than I've ever imagined. Sisko says the station must look very different to you now. It does. I know this place. He laughs. And he says, I know you. In a weird little reunion that they have.
Sisko's up to something here.
Yes.
Because he's acting like, oh, we're best buddies.
Exactly. I thought he was deliberately demonstrating how they had this history, how Dax had all these memories.
Right.
And how Sisko basically was bringing them out and doing this little reminiscing and things.
Yep.
His girlfriend is now feeling a bit left out. Uh-oh. She's going to be the old girlfriend syndrome.
This is when I noticed that she was wearing a really cool purple leather jacket.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Then Sisko says, remember when we discovered this wormhole? Lionel's face falls. One of Jadzia's proudest moments. Well, now that woman is bleeding to death in the infirmary, Sisko says. I'd rather not discuss that, Benjamin. You have to, Dax. You know as well as I do, we can't let her die. She'll live on in me. Jadzia's memories will live on, Sisko says. But Jadzia herself will die, and you will have killed her. I'll never be able to forget it, Lionel says. All I can do is to make up for it. I'm not going to the Gamma Quadrant to hide. There are entire worlds who can benefit from my knowledge and experience. Oh, he's such a good guy.
Yeah, there's how you know he's crazy.
Yeah.
This is how he's convinced himself it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to be such a genius. I'll just help all these other people.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that I killed one person to do it.
Yeah, I'm not impressed with him.
No.
I have a better idea, Sisko says. Help Jadzia. Come with me down to the infirmary. Put the symbiont back where it belongs. I can't do that, Benjamin, says Varad. Even if I wanted to, it's too late. The integration is already underway. So Varad's girlfriend, who we finally find out is called Mareel, says, he's just trying to confuse you. Varad replies, it's okay. Benjamin, the symbiont is weak. If we try another joining so soon, it might not survive. Are you willing to risk it? Sisko says, I am. The question is, are you? Mareel asks Varad, why are you wasting your time with him? Lionel shouts at her,
uh-oh.
Because he's my friend. Now go watch
uh-oh.
The others. Now that was not good. That was a little harsh. I think we might be seeing some of that personality change that Sisko warned her about. Varad says, we are still friends, aren't we, Benjamin? Sisko replies, I hope so. Come with me down to the infirmary and prove it. But he won't. Sisko knocks his hands off him and says, then our friendship is over.
Dun, dun, dun.
And we go into the ad break.
After the ad break, Lionel is sitting in Sisko's office. The girlfriend brings Miles some egg broth to keep his strength up, whatever that is. Thank you, he says sarcastically and takes it. She looks up at Lionel. He even looks different, doesn't he, Sisko says. Which he does, we covered.
Yep.
She says, he's better than he was. Sisko starts kind of poking at her about how he dismissed her earlier. She says, nothing has changed between us. Do you really believe that? Sisko asks. All right, he says, then make me believe it. Go in there and talk to him. I'm sure the two of you have a lot to say to one another. She says she doesn't want to disturb him. He keeps poking at her. She gets mad and points the phaser at him again. Lionel Luthor comes out and asks, what's wrong? He says, be careful. I don't want anything to happen to you. And then he turns and goes back into his office. The whole scene was very strange.
I think it was reinforcing the fact that he is not the person that she has known.
Yes, agreed.
Clearly, the other version of him cared for her.
Yep.
And now that connection probably doesn't mean anything.
Well, it's like this one remembers that he cared for her.
Right.
But he doesn't feel it anymore.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it seems like she's an ex all of a sudden.
Yes. Wasn't I married to you? Oh, yeah.
Quark seems to have an idea. He takes the coin he's been playing with and he rolls it over to the Klingon's feet. When the Klingon bends over to pick it up, Quark jumps on his back and shouts, "I've got him!" Which is hilarious. The Klingon pushes back against the railing and Quark screams. But I thought we'd already established that the Klingon is not the problem. He should have jumped on the woman's back.
Right.
He throws Quark's stunt double to the floor and then he picks him up. "Pathetic," the Klingon says, as Quark is like, "Ow, my ear."
I was surprised Quark actually took the initiative here.
Yeah, that was very out of character.
Then again, he'd already told Kira that he figured they were all going to be killed. So
yeah.
If he has nothing to lose, then Quark as the gambler would probably take the gamble.
Well, I think all along he was kind of preparing himself to play possum or to play overly injured, right? I think that was his yeah. whole plan. But it was definitely a risk because he didn't know. One of them could have shot him.
Yeah, exactly.
Lionel Luther comes in again, looking concerned. He tells the woman to take Quark to the infirmary. And then in the infirmary, Quark is screaming in pain. The other Klingon pulls Bashir over to look at him. Bashir opens the tricorder and says, "The damage seems superficial." And then the woman and the Klingon move away like, "Oh, who cares?" But Quark says, "No," quietly to Bashir, who finally gets it. And then he says, "Oh, but Ferengi ears are incredibly sensitive. I'd better run some tests."
In ops, Varad says the intensity of the storm has dropped 20%.
20% from what? I always wonder. Like, earlier it's up 37%. It's like, what's the baseline?
Is there a baseline for this? Then he says, "I know this has been hard on you, Benjamin. It's been hard for both of us. Not as hard as it has been for Dax."
Yeah, right.
Well, Jadzia, anyway.
Yeah.
"But it's almost over." The girlfriend comes in and says, "Good, because I'm getting tired of waiting here. Varad says he couldn't have done this without you. I would have spent the rest of my life as a mediocre man, dreaming about what might have been. You know what you have to do," he says. "Don't worry," she says. "We'll make sure you get through the wormhole and no one will stop you." "Remember," he says, "I don't want you staying here any longer than you have to. Give me an hour, then head to the wormhole. The sooner you leave, the sooner I can follow, and the sooner we'll be together." She then hugs him, and he pulls back awkwardly. She asks if it's going to be okay, and he says, "Just wait for me at the rendezvous point." She's looking worried here.
Mm-hmm.
He leans in to kiss her cheek, but now she pulls back, realizing something is wrong. Sisko smiles at her and nods, like he's doing a,
yep.
"I told you so." See, Sisko is a plotter. He's been putting these seeds in her head, pointing out these little differences, and now she's starting to see it.
Yeah, he's been playing the long game this whole time.
And you could see, just from the way he was interacting with her, he didn't really seem to have any affection for her.
Right.
Back in medical, Quark continues to cry out as Bashir pretends to work on his ear. The Klingon says, "Stop whining, or I'll put you out of your misery." That's what I would expect from a Klingon nurse.
That reminds me as a thing I used to hear as a kid, like, "I'll give you something to cry about."
I think that's a standard for parents of our generation.
Oh, for sure.
Bashir says it's not his fault, as he has a deep contusion to the auricular lobe and a possible dislocated malleus. Either condition could be fatal to a Ferengi. "But if you want him to stop, give me a hand with this." And he gives him a piece of medical gear to hold against his ear. The Klingon does that, making Quark scream again. "Just another second," Bashir says, as he prepares a hyperspray standing behind the Klingon. Then he puts the hyperspray onto the Klingon's neck, and boom, finally, we do something. He subdues the Klingon.
Yay.
The Klingon dramatically passes out and falls on top of Quark. Quark throws the guy off and asks, "How is Jadzia?" Bashir says she's stabilized, but there's no telling how much time she has left. He then goes to the stasis chamber and gets the Odo box. "We've got to get it open." Quark says, "Are you sure?"
Oh, Quark.
I'm expecting after all this, Quark's probably going to hold onto the box just in case.
Oh, yeah.
Bashir says, "If only we knew the access code." Quark replies, "Allow me," and starts playing around with the buttons like he's some kind of safecracker. "Hand me the laser scalpel." He opens the little panel on the side and presses some buttons until the lock releases. I guess, you know, it's good having someone like Quark around.
Right.
He probably practices breaking into things in his spare time.
Yeah, a little safe cracking comes in handy.
And I imagine with those really large ears, it would be useful for determining the types of locks. Because I'm like, why is he pressing the buttons on the top? But I guess he was listening to the internals of the locking mechanism to get an idea of what it's like.
Yeah, that's questionable.
So I thought that was sort of a nice little touch.
Yeah, that's questionable, though, if that's how that would work.
Questionable, but I mean, if he could hear the actual mechanism move and things, and he had enough experience with different types of locks,
well,
or that particular
yeah.
one, I guess if your hearing's, like, really sensitive, you could hear the particular
true.
Intricacies of it
working.
That's
true, and he does have the big
working.
Ears.
Yeah.
But does the lock really move when it's digital?
That would be the question.
Yeah. Well, we go back to ops, and the other Klingon dude says, "The storm has decreased another 15%. 15% from what?
Was that 15%? From the 20% decrease earlier. Or was that 15% from the baseline? So it had gone down actually 35% from the time they were talking earlier.
Excellent, Varad says. That should be more than enough to allow safe passage through the wormhole. Lionel calls Yeto, the Klingon, down in medical, but he doesn't answer because he's passed out. Lionel Luther says the doctor must have overpowered him. The doctor, the other Klingon guy says? No way. Must have been the shapeshifter. Then he says, get me to the ship. The woman says, take a hostage. Sisko volunteers, but Lionel says, I'd love your company, but I don't think you have my best interests at heart.
Not a surprise there.
Yeah. He says, Kira, I hate to inconvenience you. That's all right, she says. If Odo is free, there's no way you're getting off this station. Love that attitude.
Out of all of them, Kira would be the last one I'd pick.
I would not have picked Kira, no.
I turned my head for 2 seconds and she snapped my neck.
Well, but they only have 2 choices at this point. Oh, I guess he could have taken Miles.
Yeah, I mean, Miles is even disabled, so.
That's
perfect.
Off they go. Lionel pauses to say goodbye to his girlfriend and to Sisko. He says, friendships don't usually last over 2 lifetimes. I wish we could have made it 3. It didn't last over 2 lifetimes. He's only known Jadzia for like a year.
Yes.
Anyway, Sisko says, you'll be seeing me again, Varad. And Varad leaves. The girlfriend is sitting quietly in ops. Sisko starts poking at her again, asking where the rendezvous point is. She's like, I'm not going to tell you. Sisko says, well, you'll be waiting there a long time. I saw the look on your face when he asked you to wait for him. The plan was he was supposed to get there first, she says, not the other way around. Well, maybe it was an honest mistake, a slip of the tongue. No, she says, he lied to me. He's never lied to me before. He's not coming.
Oh, wow. Sisko just pointing out the little flaws,
yep.
Getting inside her head. He's pointed it out, and she's finally figured out, oh, wait a minute.
Well, she says, he doesn't need me anymore. No, you're wrong, Sisko says. He needs you now more than ever. You never give up, do you? I told you I'm not going to betray him. I'm not telling you to. I'm telling you to save him. She says, all you care about is Jadzia. That's right, and you care about Varad. Let's save them both. Don't you see? Dax and Varad were never meant to be joined. We have to remove that symbiont while there's still time. If you hurt him, I'll kill you, she says. And she hands the phaser and comm badge over to him. I don't doubt it, he says. I don't know.
I do like Sisko.
Don't you feel like she gave up awfully easily?
Maybe she'd realized that Sisko had been right all along.
Yeah.
And that he really wasn't the guy that she loved.
Yeah, but he's playing this card of help me save them both. How is she actually saving him by doing this? He's kind of implying that there will be some problem with the symbiont, but not really. And she doesn't know. She doesn't have the background to know.
I assume he's basically saying save the guy she knew.
Oh, save the old Varad. Yeah. Okay, I missed that.
If Dax remains in his body, that guy will be gone completely.
Okay, I missed that. Yeah, that's a good point. It just seemed a little easy.
So we go to the airlock. Lionel Luther enters and there is an errant cart sitting in the doorway. I think we know what's happening here.
Yeah.
He tries to open the second door, but it won't. Luther looks out the window and sees the ship is gone and the cart turns into Odo. Did anybody not see that coming?
Yeah. Only Lionel Luther didn't see that coming. Everybody else saw that coming.
So the ship is gone, and Odo says, that's because I released the docking clamps. Kira then elbows the Klingon in the ribs, and they start to scuffle. Varad Luther takes off running. So where's he exactly going to go? Back to ops?
I think he's trying to go, because remember, now he's got Jadzia's memories. So I think now he's running to runabout sea, because she made a point of saying earlier that she had a ship prepared for them there.
Yeah, of course. If he has all those memories, he'd know how to fly the shuttle,
right. Where
it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, he'd know the access code for the shuttle.
Correct.
Which is 1, 2, 3, 4, I believe.
No, we changed them all to 4, 3, 2, 1 in Vortex, yeah.
The fight between Kira and the Klingon continues. It looks like it could go either way. The Klingon manages to get an arm free and is about to strike Kira when Odo grabs his arm and Kira decks him. See, that's the kind of thing I expect from Kira.
Yes.
She can take out a Klingon with only a little bit of help. Although, I think if you'd hit her, she would have just got more angry. So Lionel runs into Sisko and they both have phasers pointed at each other. Varad says, we both know you aren't going to shoot me. You'd risk killing the symbiont. And if I let you go, Jadzia dies, says Sisko. But Dax will live, replies Luther. What is one girl's life compared to 8 lifetimes of knowledge and experience? He says, goodbye, Benjamin, and walks by him. Sisko waits till he gets a few feet ahead of him, turns, and says, Varad, don't call me Benjamin, and shoots him. Varad Luther goes down.
I think we all knew that was coming.
Yeah, I was just wondering when it was going to happen.
Only Picard wouldn't have shot him. Sisko definitely would have.
Yes.
Now we're in medical, and the surgery has been reversed. Lionel Luthor says he feels empty and strange. So close, Varad says to his girlfriend. I had it, and now I'm alone. She says, you're not alone, Varad. I'm here. I'll always be here. I can't remember any of it, he says. The knowledge, the confidence, it's all gone. Bashir says, Commander. And Jadzia sits up and hugs Sisko. She says she's fine, but she remembers it all. Everything he thought, everything he did. It's all so sad. I guess he'll always be with me. Then they look over at Lionel Luthor, who turns his head away. The end.
What's crazy about that is now Jadzia Dax has all those memories of Varad.
Yeah.
So it's almost like 9 lifetimes. She'd have all those experiences as well, even if, you know, he was a little psychotic.
Yeah, well, this is where it gets a little confusing, because now she technically should probably take on a little bit of the crazy as well.
That should become part of her makeup.
I mean, I was going to say, maybe it was too short, because they do talk about the period it takes to integrate. But if she remembers everything, it must have at least started to integrate.
Even if it hadn't fully taken.
Yeah. Well, okay, we've reached the end of the episode, so let's talk over analysis. What have you got?
Well, there's not a huge amount of analysis to do here. I think I talked about most of it already, which is, you know, the role that being chosen within Trill society, how that affects, you know, the running of society, whether you end up with it stratified just by the fact that you have these people with enormous amounts of experience and lifetimes worth of knowledge. Just amongst the general population. It's like you said, it's almost like Gattaca, where you have this elite class.
But it's interesting how much in the episode Dax, back in season one,
they
really played up how smart Jadzia was as a host and how much she had gone through in order to become the host.
Yes.
How successful she was, how smart she was. And then here, they almost made it seem like she was a little bit lucky, or she was in the right class, or, you know, she was maybe unfairly chosen while he was held back.
Oh, really?
That might not be a truth, but it is a truth within the society. So he might believe it. That might be his truth and not hers, because she is part of that, whatever that educated class is.
Right.
That allowed her to, you know, become the host.
Maybe, though, and this is another way of looking at it, maybe the Trill society really is extremely egalitarian. And he is the absolute outlier, that he is crazy.
Yeah, that's possible.
That Trill society is very fair and is always looking out for the best for the hosts and the symbionts. So when they don't choose you, it's not because you're not worthy.
Right.
Or something like that. It's because literally you just aren't a good fit. It wouldn't work. Ultimately, I mean, I think we saw with this bonding with Varad that he became, I'm going to say, like slightly arrogant and sort of distant and also very quick to get angry just in that like one scene. So perhaps if we look at it on completely on the positive, that they are looking out for the best for everyone.
I think we have to believe that he is an outlier.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would expect that this type of thing happened within that society quite frequently.
Yeah.
Maybe there would be sort of mafia hits to get bodies. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Stealing a symbiont.
Yeah. So maybe he's a true outlier and, you know, he truly has some kind of psychological problem, which is ultimately why the panel didn't pick him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
My final overanalysis point this week is, although they're really good as muscle, I don't think Klingons are very good hired guns.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just these particular two were like completely the rejects. And if they were from House Jurass, then I would see them as being pretty stupid.
Yeah, I think you want people who are maybe a little bit more pliable and just interested in their profit.
Yeah.
They were easily distracted. At least the one that was in medical was.
Right. They should have got Quark to set them up with some Soldiers of Fortune.
That's exactly what I was thinking, like the Vantika guys.
Yeah. Well, that's it for the analysis. I don't have a lot more to say.
What was with the storm? It's almost like it was a MacGuffin.
Well, the writers watched that episode of The Next Generation where they're in like space dock and they're doing that sweep of the ship and it's all empty.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And they thought, hey, let's do the same thing on Deep Space Nine.
I have no problem with that, with them coming up with a reason to evacuate everybody and to have a skeleton crew. I actually thought that was a nice little thing.
Yeah.
What I had the problem with was, why did we evacuate? The storm didn't cause anything. They should have thrown some effects of the storm in. We should have lost power, or that should have given an opportunity for them to try to overpower the captors.
Yeah.
The station should have been shaken like an earthquake. Something should have happened to make that storm meaningful.
Oh.
But instead, it was almost just like, oh, well, there's some lightning outside. Ha ha.
You may make it a bit more like Key Largo.
I didn't watch that.
Really?
Is it the one with Humphrey Bogart?
Yeah. Directed by John Huston, Humphrey Bogart, Hedra G. Robinson.
If I watched it, it would have been like 30 years ago. I don't remember it.
Oh, okay.
It just seemed like there was an opportunity for the storm to be a character in the story. And instead, it was a big nothing burger. And I found that disappointing.
There is more you could have done with that. Yeah, like you said, make it a character and work on the tension a little bit more.
And my other thing is Quark.
Yes.
He can't have no consequences again. This is Quark's fault.
Yeah, you'd think Miles as well might have an accident where Quark was in an airlock and it accidentally decompressed.
I mean, look, he essentially saved the day at the end by being able to get Odo out of the box.
Yeah.
But Odo would not have been in the box if it hadn't been for him. So it doesn't make up for the fact that he caused this. I find this a little bit frustrating that he continues to get away with stuff and they continue to kind of threaten and say something will happen. Kira very clearly said, no matter what happens, you are through here.
Right.
So if nothing happens in the next episode or we never bring this up again, I'm going to be irritated and I'm going to bring it up.
Why not have this group have weapons hidden somewhere on the station?
Oh, totally.
Then you go through the whole plot. They still bring them in the tractor beam and everything. They come in and then one of the Klingons wanders off. I have to find a bathroom. And then goes to wherever they've hidden the weapons.
Also, we're so terrible at security and plans. You have a skeleton crew, and you're bringing an unknown ship into dock.
Yep.
And you don't know what's going on with them. You don't know who's on the ship. You don't know anything about it. And Odo and Miles, the only two people who are not in ops, are standing right by the door. They're not even prepped. They're not armed. They don't know anything.
Yeah.
This is stupid.
Well, this actually points back to something that happened in the last episode. Do you remember when Kira was criticizing Dax or was poking Dax about that you're too reliant on technology? I feel this is one of those instances of they've got the sensors. They can detect weapons and things and they can give them a warning. And they're relying on the technology rather than relying on common sense.
Well, except for every single time we've had a problem on the station, somebody has taken a device and attached it to something and overridden security.
Yeah, they've just plugged it into one of the open Ethernet ports.
How many times do you have to get electrocuted by the live wire before you stop touching the live wire? How many times are you Bart Simpson?
Yes.
I mean, come on. I get frustrated by things that keep repeating themselves like that. Like watching Next Gen, quite often, I would find it frustrating that the people were too smart. And sometimes on this show, I'm like, we cannot be this dumb every single week.
That's pretty funny. But yeah, there's a lot of protocols or procedures they could have in place that would avoid these type of problems.
Let's be more careful.
Yes. Let's not beam Klingons directly into ops with a telepathic virus. Yes.
I mean, look, these are nitpicks, right? These are things I think if you just watch it and you're not going to do a podcast about it, you kind of go, oh, that was silly. Ha ha. And you move on.
Yeah, but we are kind of nitpicking this. The problem is, I think we're starting to reach a point of there's been some really great episodes and really good episodes and episodes that have dealt with Bajoran politics and the struggles. And that makes the episodes that have the flaws that you can pick a little bit more picky, as it were.
I guess. I mean, the overarching story was very interesting. Having someone coming in to steal Dax, great.
Yes.
Having it be the guy who played Lionel Luthor, great. Good ideas. And actually, all the acting was great in this episode. I have no complaints about anybody's acting.
I mean, even the little touch of like he, you know, how he held himself and had his hair. Yeah. And then after the change, it's like
all good.
He turned into Bryce Cummings.
L.A. Slimeball. But these little things kind of bring the story down.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to women in the future. And I just have kind of a short thing here.
Okay.
In this scenario, the woman, the girlfriend, whatever her name was, she was the tough one.
Muriel.
she was the one who won the little fight with Kira. She was the one who kind of kept the plan going no matter what happened. But in the end, she's also the one who kind of gave up. And I see your point. I hadn't thought about it, that really what she was doing was saving him to be the thing that she wanted him to be. I guess what was really happening was she was kind of clinging to some romantic view that she had of Varad. And when that crumbled, she caved. And I thought that was just a little bit weak because she seemed like she was so tough. But then in the end, they sort of made a stereotypical female decision, which I didn't like.
I saw that as she would do anything for the man that she loved. The problem was that he did something that was self-destructive and she needed to step in and save him.
Well, but it wasn't self-destructive. It was destructive of the relationship that she saw.
I saw it as it was destructive to Varad as well, because he was becoming something that he wasn't.
But that was what he wanted.
Which was really bad for him.
Well, in her opinion, and in Sisko, well, Sisko, it was selfish. Yeah. But I think he was talking about who the person that he was as Varad was a life of mediocrity.
Yeah.
And he didn't want that anymore. So when he became Varad Dax, that was gone. The life of mediocrity was gone. Now he had all this knowledge of all of these other lifetimes that came before him. Now he was going to go and change the Gamma Quadrant.
Right.
Which was his own way of convincing himself that it was okay to kill someone. But he was getting what he wanted and that he was prepared for what happened. But suddenly, she didn't like the fact that this wasn't her boyfriend anymore.
Right.
That's what I mean about clinging to a romantic view. She thought that he was just going to be an improved version of himself. He knew that's not what was going to happen. I think this was a thing that he was planned for and prepared for. But when it didn't turn out to be what she wanted.
Oh, I get what you mean from that. He knew it was going to change and didn't really tell her the truth about what would happen.
Right. She liked Varad with the bull haircut. She didn't like L.A. Slimeball Varad.
Okay.
I don't think I have any other women in the future topics. Okay, so let's move on to rating then. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral? What is your rating?
I'm giving it a thumbs up, but it's just off neutral.
I struggle with the rating for this one because I think that the idea was really good, but I think the execution fell apart in many ways.
Yeah.
And I also was a little frustrated that once again, we have an episode that's about Dax, but we had barely any Dax in it. She was unconscious for half of it or more. And I don't understand the way they use this character. Yeah. Jadzia is really underrepresented. While I think that Bashir was so badly written all last season, Dax was underwritten. And she continues to be underused and underwritten in a bizarre way.
Yeah.
Because yet again, this is all about her and all about her life and all about everything about her. And she's asleep for most of the episode.
Yeah.
I found that really frustrating. I wonder if, you know, there's this whole thing about the actress wasn't treated well when she was hired.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she wasn't treated well during the filming, but she was obviously brought on for some sort of sex appeal. And look, Star Trek has a history of that. And we could talk about that, but
that's a separate podcast.
I could spend a lot of time talking about that. And I don't want to do that. But I'm wondering if because of that, she was looked at so two-dimensionally that they didn't know how to write for that. You can't write for that. It's not enough to just be cute. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't really do anything for you. So I think this sort of quirkiness with that character is coming from a little bit of that, because it's the underwritten part of it. Maybe a little bit of her not really sure how to play it because she hasn't developed a personality yet. She hasn't developed a character. And so we end up with this sort of weirdness with her. And that's a bummer. I hope we improve.
We do. It definitely does improve.
So because of all of this, I sit on the fence and I'm going to give this a neutral because I think there was a good idea, but I don't think we executed it.
Okay.
I think that's it. So that wraps up episode 4. Come back next week for episode 5. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me.